Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome once again to the American Activist. We're in our second hour here, and I'm taking over for my lovely wife, Ingrid Castle. And this hour, we're going to do something very, very interesting. We are going to go back in time to that really weird period in American history from about September 12th, 2001, until the early part of September in 2002. Now, if you remember correctly, we were subjected to this really strange barrage of claims from the White House, from the Bush administration, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, the yellow cake uranium thing, the aluminum tube thing, and that we were constantly being told that Saddam was a threat to America and its allies. And there are these implications of this relationship between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, a link, by the way, that is still present in most people's minds. And so what we didn't know at the time was that this was a very might not be the term. This was an orchestrated event to dialogue the world into accepting a war with Iraq that was a preconceived notion that predates September 11th by several years. And we know that through the Project for a New American Century thesis paper that had been released as early as 1998. So we're going to spend the next hour with Elizabeth de la Vega. She is a 20-year retired federal prosecutor, and she has just put together a book called The U.S. versus Bush, and it is a mock indictment of the president, the vice president, Donald Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice. And while the setting is mock, because we haven't had a grand jury seated yet to process through an indictment, but the facts are not. So the setting is mock. It's very exciting. I get a lot of books, and unfortunately, I don't have usually the time to read through an entire book before I have another book that I need to begin reading. But I had to put everything else on hold as I went through this because it was such a fascinating journey through that period of time and the recollections in my own mind of the propaganda that we were being subjected to. And Elizabeth de la Vega, in her book, The U.S. versus Bush, does a very excellent job of chronologizing that period of time to get an indictment of this cabal of defendants for fraud. I mean, simple, fraud. They knowingly and willingly and with malice aforethought deceived the American people, the U.S. Congress, the people of the world, and foreign governments into accepting this war in Iraq. And I think that we can see where that has taken us, not just Americans as a people, but the world as well. And so if the war in Iraq was based on fraud from the get-go, then everything else that has come since is based on fraud. And I think that you can take a look at where we're at in America with the passage of the Patriot Act. We just took a plane trip. You remember last week we were reporting to you live from Chandler, Arizona. And the whole police state and the way airport security is handled is just really, really something else. And it was built on this fraud of the White House, the Bush administration, to dialogue us into perpetual war against terrorism. And so when we come back, we'll be with Elizabeth de la Vega. Hang tight, everybody. This is going to be a very interesting journey into your own mind during that very strange period in American history post-September 11th. We'll be back in just a moment.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who's responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Everybody, and we are back. This is the American Activist, and you're on the Republic Broadcasting Network, and I'm your host, Don Harkins, and we have with us this morning Elizabeth De La Vega, a 20-year federal prosecutor, now retired, who has put together a book called The U.S. versus Bush, which is a mock grand jury proceeding to get an indictment against President Bush, Vice President Cheney, then National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, then Secretary of State Colin Powell, and Donald Rumsfeld, and it's a very fascinating look backwards into that period of time that we all kind of remember, and I think that we are really very confused about it. And this book lays out the process of fraud to defraud the world into accepting a war in Iraq. And before we get to Elizabeth, who's on the line with us, good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. And, you know, they're about a third of the way into the book, which I was fast-paced, it was exciting, and it went through because it was keying on all these different little buzz images that we still have in our minds from that really strange year when we were prepping or banging war drums or whatever it was that this country was doing or this administration was doing to justify war in Iraq. But there's this comment by one of your fictitious witnesses on the stand, and he was describing what the Bush administration was doing as juggling, and
right.
The comment was, well, he wasn't just juggling tennis balls, quote, it was more like a Penn and Teller performance where they were juggling all different things, knives, flaming torches, a couple of bowling pins, a Nerf ball, a clock, all in the air at once, and then added that it was all being done on a tightrope.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And that's exactly what your chronology uncovers. It's really fascinating, and what gave you the impetus to do that, to put all that together And how did that happen? Did you, from day one, were you beginning to think, God, this is not making any sense? Or after it was all over, did you begin reassembling the chronology?
Well, when they first started doing this, which, of course, was really not that long after 9/11, I was still working at the U.S. Attorney's Office. And I remember, and I worked there until 2004 in the fall, and I remember in the fall of 2002, when the administration was really kind of pouring on its marketing campaign, seeing a very small article, really. The administration was saying that Saddam Hussein was a danger and so forth, but there was a very small article that the CIA had said really the only time that Saddam Hussein would be a danger would be is if we invaded him. That would be the only time he might strike back. And so I was aware, as were many people, that there was something really fishy going on. But it wasn't until after I retired that I really had time to put this all together. And by that time, of course, it was clear to many people that we had been defrauded. But even when I did put it together, I was amazed myself at how really, I mean, in a sense, you said the word well, how well they had done it. It was done brilliantly, actually, but in a Machiavellian way.
Exactly. And I would suspect with some help also, they had cooperation from the mainstream media, and I believe at the high end of the global international banking system, there was some cooperation as well, because war is so profitable. But it was just that image of them juggling all these things really put into focus what they were doing. And let's go back. We have just a few minutes before we take the first break. But if you don't mind, let's go back into the structure of the book, which, by the way, is available in bookstores everywhere, correct?
Yes, exactly. And
U.S. versus Bush, available in bookstores everywhere. And I just suggest people go out and get it, because it's so compelling. And we're definitely in an age of time where a lot of really excellent information is not buried any longer. Researchers and writers have put it all out there for us to digest in very readable, highly readable, and in this case, very entertaining form. But let's start out with the structure of the proceeding, and then how you proceed, and then at some later point in the show here, we'll get into some of the nuances that swayed people, not just the American people, but Congress, foreign governments, and foreign peoples as well. But let's go into the structure. How was it that you decided that you were going to unfold this thing, and why did you choose the grand jury indictment setting?
Okay, well, I did choose the grand jury indictment setting, and what that is the forum where cases are presented to a body of people who are charged with deciding whether there's probable cause to indict somebody or to charge somebody federally. And I use this forum because when I would listen to the news, I finally, after I retired, actually got a chance to really hear how people talked about all this stuff on TV. I never really paid attention before. And it was just appalling, because people just yell at each other, of course, and don't say anything of substance. So I wanted to have one place where it was all laid out in a very kind of non-charged atmosphere. And I thought the grand jury setting would be a good place to do that, because that's what you do in any grand jury proceeding. So it's 6 days of testimony, and as you mentioned, the agents are fictitious, but everything else in it is true.
That's the beauty of, I don't know, you hit psychological triggers in me anyway, because I paid enough attention to the news as it was going on. I mean, that's kind of my business. But it was a confusing mass of weirdness at the dominant media level, because you're getting all these words from various players in the Bush administration, and there's no complete picture except for Saddam Hussein, weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Related to Al-Qaeda.
You're right.
And so
to go back
to the chronology is just, I mean, you just hit bam, bam, bam. All these things that we sort of recall, but you put them in this chronological form that unfolds the whole picture in an extremely enlightening and revealing way.
Right, right. And I guess you're going to your break in a second here.
Well, we have a couple minutes, yeah.
Okay. But one thing I realized when I went back and looked at all this stuff, which included the Downing Street memos, not just the one from July that everybody heard about, but from March of 2002, the British were talking to the U.S. people, such as Wolfowitz and Rice and so forth, saying there are no grounds for this war. It's illegal. And what they all talked about was not whether to go to war, but how to get the public to go along with it. And they actually came up with these two real main theories. One was that they called it the conjunction of Saddam Hussein and terrorists and weapons of mass destruction. And then the other one was what they called wrong footing, which would be to go through this UN process really as a sham and hope that Saddam Hussein wouldn't cooperate. And but that didn't really work the way they wanted. But the bottom line is that they were working all throughout 2002 really trying to figure out how to sell the war.
And that, and so then what we have then is you created this environment of a grand jury proceeding to achieve indictment, and I believe that the main thrust is proving the element of fraud, correct?
Yes, exactly. What I wanted to do was the same analysis you do in any fraud case, which is you really do cut two timelines. One is a public, one shows what is said and done publicly by a set of people, and the other one shows what information they had available to them behind the scenes and what they did and said behind the scenes. And when there's a huge discrepancy there, you know that they are intentionally defrauding people because they're either making statements that they know are outright false, which is a lie, of course, or they're saying things which they haven't even bothered to investigate, which is another form of fraud called making statements with reckless disregard for the truth. So either way, you have fraud, and that's the process I used. And it was really, it took me about 10 months, actually, to make these two timelines, and I talk about it in the book how I pretty much laid it all around my house.
You're very efficient compiling system.
Yeah, right.
I have one of those as well.
My dog getting involved sometimes, too, when I would have things on the floor. He really liked the White House press briefings, apparently. But that's the way I did it. And I looked at the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report and numerous other reports. And by the way, all these reports were really kind of favorable to the administration in the first place. So I was using a very conservative set of facts, and I was only using things that didn't depend on a witness's statement. They were just things that were undisputed, really.
And in that sense, so the only, I guess, avenue that, or the only out that elements of the Bush administration would have would be this concept of plausible deniability. And in your analysis of things, do you accept any claims that any of these players had plausible deniability to the intelligence at their disposal?
No, absolutely not. No, not a bit.
That is exactly the conclusion I came to as well.
Right.
So everybody, we are coming up on our first break, and I told you, we're going to go into a really interesting odyssey in our minds because we all remember this stuff. We all remember yellow cake, and we all remember the aluminum tubes and weapons of mass destruction, the relationship of, or attempting to bridge Osama bin Laden to Saddam Hussein, and we remember all this stuff, but the chronology as it all unfolds in this grand fraudulent scheme is really made apparent in U.S. versus Bush. So we'll be back, everybody, in just a few moments with Elizabeth de la Vega, who has put together this incredible chronology of this fraud that was perpetrated on the American people, Congress, the U.S. Congress, and the world in order to justify the war in Iraq. And I guess, too, to justify war elsewhere because it's ever-expanding. And so the entirety of this post-9/11 era is based on fraud by the U.S. government and the Bush administration. So everybody, we'll be back in just a few moments with our guest this morning, Elizabeth de la Vega. I'm your host, Don Harkins.
A global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Once again, and we are with our guest, Elizabeth De La Vega. This is Don Harkins on the American Activist, and you're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. And Elizabeth, we've got about four minutes or so in this segment, which I believe is a perfect amount of time to frame the indictment. The book opens with a little grayish-paged section of 19 pages that is the indictment itself. And let's go ahead and cover some of the elements of the indictment, because the attempt here is to prove fraud, simple fraud,
right,
as the basis for everything that has happened since September 11th with regard to wars in Iraq, Patriot Act, and everything that we're experiencing in America.
Right. And actually, if you could get started, do you have it in front of you? Because
yes, I, sure
I
do.
Actually don't. and I don't have it memorized, but essentially I can explain what the crime is. Is
sure.
that what you're driving at? The crime is conspiracy to defraud the United States, which is a violation of United States Code Section 371 in
right.
Title 18. And I'm sure most of your listeners don't have that in front of them. But what that prohibits is really conspiracy, by the way, is a legal term that is a very neutral term. It doesn't mean like a crazy kind of conspiracy, but rather just an agreement to commit a crime. And then the defraud part requires proof that the people have agreed to use deceit, any form of deceit, to interfere with a branch or agency of government. And in this case, as the indictment lays out, the branch of government was Congress, and I explain this in detail in the book, but the administration specifically directed its marketing campaign to Congress and to the public simultaneously with the explicit idea that they would be able to get Congress to go along with the authorization to use military force. In fact, Karl Rove and Andy Card said as much in an interview in September of 2002. So that's kind of what the crime is.
Okay, and so you take 19 pages to carefully spell it out, and you've got, let's see here, we have approximately 61, 62, 63 different, not charges so much, but allegations, I suppose.
Yeah, they're called overt acts.
Huh?
They're called overt
acts. Okay.
It means something that's done to carry out the conspiracy in some way or another. You know, it could be an innocent act in and of itself, but it's something that's done to advance the conspiracy.
And now, what's interesting, too, is people are continually saying that all these offenses are, say, impeachable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem with that is that, as you indicated here, they really put on quite a show for Congress, lying to Congress about various aspects of this thing. And Congress, which should not be gullible by now, apparently still was enough to involve this country in these morasses of wars that we're now involved in. But impeachment is almost really not the right venue, as far as I'm concerned, because so many members of Congress are themselves implicated in this, quote, conspiracy and participated in the fraud or in the defrauding of America. And so the grand jury setting is more appropriate, I believe.
Well, actually, I think in the end we are kind of stuck with having to have Congress deal with this, because they are the ones who are charged in the Constitution with conducting oversight of the executive branch. And you're right, there was certainly, in some cases, complicity on the part of members of Congress. In some cases, they didn't do their due diligence. But there actually were a lot of things that the administration did that made it really impossible for Congress to deal in any public way with responding to these arguments. For example, they had this national intelligence estimate that was 90 pages long that was classified. They didn't deliver it to Congress until about 10 hours before the vote. And Congress, even if they had a chance to read it, couldn't talk about any of it publicly. So the only thing they could talk about was this 25-page white paper, which was declassified, but that removed all the qualifiers, like when the National Intelligence Estimate, which again was skewed towards the administration's position, but when it said, you know, we think maybe they have this, they took out all that kind of stuff. So Congress couldn't make its case without violating the laws about classified information. So that was, again, part of the administration's Machiavellian plan.
Sure. And part of this really bizarre Penn and Teller juggling act.
Exactly, exactly.
No, that image just sticks in my mind.
You
I think
like
probably
that.
Most of our listeners have heard of Penn and Teller, and they're still doing it. They've been on stage for decades now, I think since the 80s. And so I think most of us can imagine those two guys juggling all this stuff. And now go ahead and place that image in your minds with regard to the Bush administration and how it sold this fraud to the American people. So, everybody, we're at the break right now. Elizabeth, thank you so much. We'll be back in a few moments with Elizabeth De La Vega, and we're discussing the U.S. versus Bush. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Gold, ever climbing, as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall. How long before it hits rock bottom? Between 1800 and 1913, the value of the dollar was more or less constant. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, the value of the dollar has depreciated 97%. Due to global inflationary policies and the continued erosion of the U.S. dollar, gold and silver are still in the early stages of the greatest bull market the world has ever seen. Whether you purchase precious metals to stabilize your portfolio or you're looking for strong growth, gold and silver will provide you with both. Don't you owe it to yourself to do business with Republic Trading Group? Call us today and become a part of the raging bull in gold and silver. 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898. Call now. 1-800-691-7898.
Hi, this is Steve Shank with Fearless Radio and RBN, your only source for solutions to problems of troubled times. Do you realize that 3 years ago, the JMS Food Group warned people that there would come a time when if you didn't grow it yourself, or you already had it stored, you wouldn't dare eat it? Wait a minute. E. coli on our spinach and lettuce? That's our food you're talking about. You know where E. coli comes from? Feces, black water. In short, poop. We have to decide quickly to get all the food we're going to need. It's obvious that contamination can leave us hungry even before food shortages shut us down. For help ordering your food supply and protection from dishonest suppliers, call 800-409-5633. On the web, efoodsdirect.com. On the phone, 800-409-5633.
Welcome back to The American Activist. I'm your host, Don Harkins, and you're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. And our guest this morning is Elizabeth De La Vega. She is the author of a book called The U.S. versus Bush et al., and it just goes through the chronology of events between approximately September 12th of 2001 until September, 13th or 14th in 2002, when the U.S. finally took its case publicly to the United Nations to get some kind of confirmation from the UN that we can go ahead, that we had the, quote, moral authority to, the moral imperative, I should say, to attack Iraq because Saddam Hussein was linked to al-Qaeda, had weapons of mass destruction, and his nuclear program was progressing to the point that pretty soon he was going to be able to bomb the United States or its friends or allies. And Hi. Thank you. I guess that's kind of it in a nutshell, isn't it, Elizabeth?
Well, and actually then I go through all the way through the authorization to use military force, which was voted on by Congress around October 11th,
right.
2002. So, yeah, the plan involved not just the UN, but definitely Congress and the public and the world. And that was part of this juggling thing. They had all these different audiences they had to persuade, and part of the problem was that some of the things that would persuade one audience would offend another audience. So that was really why they were in such a delicate situation.
And then also, too, not just offend, but there were these intent. It's like we know in our own lives, if you start telling lies, say when you're 14 years old, mm-hmm. by the time you're 16 or 17, you're constantly having to adapt the present reality to meet up with the things that you had said previously.
Right. Well, that's
interpersonally, that becomes a mess.
It really does. It really does. And that's the interesting thing about this case and applying the fraud analysis to this case, because the same problems that happen to anybody when they try to cheat people or deceive people are the things that happen to this administration. Because on the one hand, they're trying to make the people in the United States feel like this is such an urgent crisis. Well, that leads some people in the country, their own base in particular, to think, well, why aren't we doing this right now? Why is it taking so long? And so that would make that group mad. But then at the same time, they had to go through the charade with the UN, which would delay matters. So, and then also another conflict that they ended up running into was that the president would say, make these arguments as to how serious it was, but then he was also trying to say, well, I haven't made up my mind yet. And people would think, well, why haven't you made up your mind then, if it's so serious?
And then with the British, too, Tony Blair was in on it from the get-go, and yet he was having to make his case before his legislative bodies in Great Britain.
Oh, right, right, right. And they, I don't really go into that much about the British collaboration with this, but it is very clear, I think, from reading the book that the British were completely working with the United States and with the Bush administration all throughout this whole period. And we actually know that they came up with, they called it the dodgy dossier, which included either fabricated or misstated intelligence as well. So all these different arguments that we heard later on, like about the uranium that you mentioned and about the aluminum tubes, were kind of the product of collaboration, although sometimes, again, the British would come up with one and the U.S. intelligence people would say, well, we don't really buy that one. And so the administration was having to tamp down all this controversy. It was very difficult.
No, it is. And drawing just in our own lives, I think that is a really great analogy. I think we've all been involved in some interpersonal dramas in our lives where we have to be sensitive to the feelings of somebody on one side, and then we might be a little bit more strident in our opinions to somebody on the other, and then those two people may someday actually get together and talk about things, and then suddenly you're caught in the middle of a thing where you're trying to placate one, meet the needs of another, and then you look like the bad guy.
Oh, right, right, exactly. But you mentioned the media before. The media really helped out the administration a lot in this whole effort, because there were so many obvious flaws in what the administration was saying, but they didn't, not only did they not highlight them, they basically buried them.
Yeah.
I mean, one big one was that the administration was on the one hand saying, this is going to be a cakewalk. It's going to be no problem. And the reason is because Iraq is such a debilitated state right now, and the military in Iraq is almost non-existent. They don't have any equipment and so forth. Well, that is really quite inconsistent with the idea that Iraq is this looming, terrifying power that's going to be a threat to the United States. But nobody really mentioned that.
Yeah, the press... And that's the press seems to be, they're not really reporters anymore on the dominant or in the mainstream media. They're repeaters.
They basically
go ahead and repeat what the administration says on that day. And even if there's a contradiction a couple of days later, they just repeat the contradiction without drawing any conclusions about the contradictive nature of the statements.
Right. And the White House was brilliant in feeding the media information that they could use that way, if you could even call it information, really. It was clearly propaganda.
Right.
Because one example, we talked about the UN, when they wanted to get this approval to restart the UN inspections, which they got around September 15th, I think. Well, the very next day, Saddam Hussein said, well, we will let in the inspectors. And that, of course, was not what the administration wanted at all. So what they did immediately, and I mean immediately, it was within hours, they put up on the website, the White House website, these canned talking points about, well, who can trust Saddam Hussein? And so that's what went out. You know, this is not the these are not the actions of somebody who's trying to actually solve a problem, meaning the White House. You know?
Right.
They were clearly trying to keep it as a tense situation. And the media just picked up on all those talking points, and there they went.
Well, one of those talking points, too, was this idea that Saddam Hussein was shopping all over the world to try to get these highly specialized, very specific tubes, aluminum tubes, for the purpose of centrifuge and weapons of mass destruction and nuclear capability and all that. And so it was all very confusing what they would be for, which apparently was intentional. But let's, as a talking point that was intentionally intended to deceive, let's go over that scenario a little bit, because I know that everybody has in their minds this thing about aluminum tubes and nuclear weapons.
Right.
So let's discuss that a little bit, how
okay.
that fraud was perpetrated.
Well, first of all, the key element, a key component of the administration's case for war really had to do with nuclear weapons, because there was no way that the country was going to support the idea of attacking a country 8,000 miles away on the chance that it had anthrax or biological weapons. The nuclear weapons were the scary thing. And the centrifuge argument was that the Iraqis were trying to get these aluminum tubes that you would use in what's called a cascade in a centrifuge, and that would basically spin the uranium and make it enriched uranium. And that's what you need for a nuclear weapon. So the administration on September 8th, I think it was, started talking about these tubes, and they sent out different administration officials onto these talk shows, including Condoleezza Rice and Rumsfeld and Cheney. And they said some variation, this is what Condoleezza Rice said, and the other one said it slightly differently, but they said, she said, these tubes are only suited, that's a quote, for use in a centrifuge. Well, at the time they were making these allegations about these tubes, first of all, they acted as if the information was new, which is something that's strikingly similar to what they're doing with Iran and these explosive devices. Well, it wasn't new information. We had known about these tubes since April of 2001, and the reason we knew about them was because the Iraqis were buying them on the Internet.
Not hiding much.
Yeah, no, I don't know if it's Craigslist or eBay or what they were doing, but they were not hiding anything. They were actually haggling over the price with vendors, too, which is, again, not the sign of a clandestine program.
Absolutely.
But more than that, so because we had actually intercepted the tubes, we had them. And at the time the administration was making these statements, there were 12 different reports. Well, there were actually 14 reports, but 12 of them said whether or not you could use these tubes for a centrifuge is controversial. It's in a matter of debate among the various intelligence agencies. So right off the bat, in terms of fraud, if you go out and say something's a certainty and it's only usable for something when the information you have behind the scenes is that that conclusion is debatable, that's fraud. But it gets worse because out of those reports, half of them, ones by our main experts, the nuclear experts from Lawrence Livermore and the State Department people also, said that the tubes were probably going to be used for rockets. And they actually matched the specifications of tubes that we knew the Iraqis had used for rockets, and they weren't suited for the centrifuge. And they specifically talked about why they weren't suited. They were three times too long, and you could say, well, okay, we can make them shorter. They were three times too thick, and maybe you could machine them down and make them thinner. They had a coating, and this is what the Iraqis were specifying. It wasn't like they were just using ones they had around the place. They had a coating which would react poorly with the process of making enriched uranium. So that would have to be taken off. And they were three times too wide. Well, you can't make a tube narrower. That's just impossible. So they were basically, the administration was basically saying something that was completely contradicted by our foremost experts in the country. And to make that even worse, if that's not bad enough, when they started talking about it, some of the experts spoke up and in the Department of Energy, and there was a memo issued by Spencer Abram, who was a Bush appointee, the head of the Department of Energy, and he said, no one at the labs can talk about these tubes.
No, isn't that something? So
yeah.
When we go shopping for things to suit our purposes, whatever the purpose may be, we try to get something that is fairly close to what we envision, what is practical.
Mm-hmm.
And this planted thought that Saddam Hussein was out on the open market attempting to buy these components of his nuclear weapons program, when you take a look at the things that he was actually procuring, they in no way whatsoever meet the needs of this alleged program.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
not whatsoever.
Right, exactly.
But yet, as we move on down the line, because these things happen, boom, 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 day after day after day, this 24/7 assault from all different directions on what Saddam Hussein is going to do to people, and he's a threat and everything, the details of this aluminum tube thing gets lost, but what gets writ large in the public mind is aluminum tubes, nuclear weapons.
Exactly, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, and so that is far from something that's a mistake.
Sure.
So even when they started saying it, they had the information that made it clear that what they were saying was, at best, something made recklessly with disregard for whether it's true or false, but more likely just an outright lie. And then they tried to suppress any information that came out that would contradict what they said. And then the International Atomic Energy Agency people also started writing things publicly. But none of these things were in the main. They weren't, say, on Fox News.
Right.
Sure. I mean, they weren't on TV, and they were in publications that were not widely distributed. But so the administration was getting this information all different ways. You know, even if you could let them off the hook for September 8th, which I don't think you can, they kept being told, no, these are not usable. But yet, sure enough, in the January 2003 State of the Union address, Bush talked about the tubes. He talked about them when he spoke to the public at large in October. And, you know, these are things they talked about with Congress. And so that was actually one of the topics that was completely misrepresented in the white paper that was the publicly released part of the National Intelligence Estimate. They left out the whole part where the State Department and the Department of Energy said, we don't think you can use these tubes for nuclear weapons. So it was really a complicated but very, very effective fraud.
Sure. And that is the element that we're attempting to prove here. I think that when you get into the details of 9/11, the details of many, many aspects of this administration's maneuvering to launch the world and this country into a state of perpetual war, we can go down a multitude of rabbit holes. There's no limit to the amount of directions we can go, the evidence we can uncover. But in a legal sense, and for clarity of mind, if we can prove fraud, we've proven a case that is at the foundation of everything, and also something that people can wrap their minds around, and something that a court of objective and competent jurisdiction could prosecute.
Right, if we could ever get the, you know, you'd have to get the, well, the president, there's a constitutional problem with prosecuting the president, but just as a general matter, these facts certainly satisfy the elements of the crime. And as I talk about quite a bit in the book, this is a fraud that's just like the Enron fraud and the types of deceit that were used, but nothing's being done about it, which is absolutely outrageous.
Well, and that's when we come back. We'll have just a couple of minutes after this break, and in fact, I'm going to ask you what it is you think that we should do now. What is your vision? What was the purpose of your putting together the book, The U.S. versus Bush et al. By Elizabeth de la Vega, available at bookstores everywhere. So get out there and get it, and get ready to indict the president. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Since 1988, Herbal Healer Academy has been the global supplier of the finest natural medicines. We specialize in keeping you alive and healthy. We provide outstanding products like ECX, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, oregano oil, and hundreds of herbals, oils, books, and educational materials. We have homeopathic detox solutions for chemtrails, radiation, MSG, and aspartame poisoning. We also train naturopathic healers via correspondence education. Why wait any longer? Go ahead and do it today. Sign up on the web and receive our new 120-page catalog and a current Herbal Healer newsletter free. Simply log on to herbalhealer.com and check out the online member testimonials and our hundreds of exceptional products. That's herbalhealer.com, your website for safe, effective, natural alternatives and education. That's herbalhealer.com.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Americans will already realize our nation is in deep trouble, need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who is responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
Okay, and we're back for the final segment here of this week's edition of The American Activist, and we are on the line with Elizabeth de la Vega, who is the author of a book called The U.S. versus Bush et al. And Elizabeth, I know that once a gal reaches retirement or a guy reaches retirement years, they're just looking for something to do. And so you just, what, you chose, you didn't choose this, I should say, just because you wanted to idly pass your retirement years away. You wanted to accomplish something. And what is it that you would like to see happen as a result of people reading the book, getting the information in their head, and perhaps expanding the choir base of people who believe that the Bush administration committed fraud to launch us into the era that we're now in?
Right. Well, what I explain in the book is essentially the analogy that I see here is, is to this an incident involving a woman named Kitty Genovese who was stabbed repeatedly on the way home from work a long time ago in Queens, and none of the neighbors, nobody did anything about it, and she was killed. And I feel that now we have an ongoing crime in front of our very eyes. So in writing the book, I call it a 911 call. I think we need, my purpose was really to educate people and help them understand this complex fraud and enable them to see that it was intentional. It was just like other crimes that are prosecuted. And knowing that, we really can't just walk away from it. The problem is I do think that we, the people we have to pressure are Congress. And as unresponsive as they appear to be, I think that we just have to keep stepping up the pressure. And it doesn't matter if people are Republicans or Democrats or whatever party people belong to or no party, because this is something that we just can't let happen and feel as if we can move on, because it's still going on, and the same types of fraud that got us to Iraq are keeping us there. The president's still talking about trying to connect Iraq and 9/11 in the latest State of the Union address. So it's basically, for me, a call to the public, a call to Congress to hold the president accountable. And the way it has to happen initially, at least, is through hearings. I think we need to have public hearings about this information so that people who don't already get it will finally get it.
Well, and there's a cliche I heard years and years ago, and that is that if the people will lead, the leaders will follow.
Exactly. You got it. You have hit the nail on the head. That's what I should have said.
and that is where we're at.
Right.
We tolerate this as a nation, therefore it's happening, therefore it's occurring. And you're right. If you're an American and you don't like the diminishing civil liberties in this country based on this fraud, you have an obligation to get active.
Right.
And if you're an American who doesn't think that the creation of 2 million refugees and almost 1 million dead people over this fraud is tolerable, then you need to get involved.
Right, right. You're exactly right.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for being here. Thanks so much for putting the book together. Everybody, U.S. versus Bush et al., available in bookstores everywhere. Get out and do her. And, you know, once you get the information, get out there and speak to people's listening, write to their reading, and go out there and make a difference in our world today, because it's true. If the people lead, the leaders will follow.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Elizabeth.